Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gunnar Tindberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm so happy that Christine Scott is here with me. Her new book of short stories is called, very uncharacteristic title, Pure Hollywood. And in order to alleviate one's fear that she's giving us pure Hollywood, the cover is a picture of the most pernicious-looking cactus-like plant I've ever seen. It's pure Hollywood in the desert among plants with spines and really endangered people. I think that Christine Scott writes the most unusual, the most singular, the most perverse sentences of any of the people working today. In 1996, John Ashbery, writing in the Times Literary Supplement, said that the best book that he read that year was a book called Night Work, a first book by a writer named Christine Scott. And I read Night Work. It was fascinating. Then came a novel called Florida, a book of stories called A Day, A Night, Another Day, Summer, a novel called All Souls. Christine joined me to talk about her last book, Prosperous Friends, so detailed about the relationship among people that one of the people I gave it to said it made him feel like he was hallucinating. And now we've got Pure Hollywood. I mention these books. I don't usually do this anymore, mention a writer's complete work. I'm mentioning it because they're all good. They're all worth reading. And it's worth my telling you how to spell her name because you'd never guess. Christine Scott. Scott is spelled S-C-H-U-T-T. Pure Hollywood is a book of stories, many of which have appeared in a literary journal called Noon. What is Noon and what is its position? Because it's a very individual journal.
Yes, it is. It's been in existence for almost 20 years. Diane Williams is the editor and has final say over all stories. But she and I came up with the idea together. I'm responsible for the name, which is, it comes out of Emily Dickinson. It's one of her favorite words. It's no both ways. And so,
Noon.
But it appears in lots of her poems. So we thought we'd call it Noon. And for the first several issues, I read with her and helped her in the making of the magazine. But there came a time when I wrote a story in A Day, A Night, Another Day, Summer. It was called The Blood Jet. And I liked it a lot. And
The Blood Jet is poetry. That's the line from Sylvia Plath.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly. Uh-huh. And it's all about poetry and that, where it comes from or could come from. And in any event, I couldn't find anyone to publish it. And so I noticed that sometimes other editors put their own work in magazines. So I asked Diane, would you take this and publish it? And she did. And I had one other instance that was very amusing, which is it's a story that's actually in this new collection. It's called The Duchess of Albany. And My agent said, let's send this to the New Yorker, the Atlantic, and Harper's. And Paris Review, I think, too.
She's a marvelous woman. I happen to know her, mm-hmm. but quite by accident, not through
yes.
you,
yes.
Gail Hawkman.
Mm-hmm.
And she believes in her writers, and she'll only take on a writer if she likes the work.
We did send that story out, and to a man or woman, they wrote back, and they thought a page was missing. They said, they said the end just falls off a cliff. And so... That's when I committed myself to Diane because she was not going to tell me it fell off a cliff.
Well, it's noon,
mm-hmm.
and I am the delighted recipient. It comes out only once a year.
Yes.
It specializes in stories that used to be called incorrectly minimalism.
Mm-hmm.
These are minimalism,
mm-hmm.
but minimalism... with short, sharp shocks. Now, Pure Hollywood shocked me. Christine Scott is a vignette writer, a mood writer, a writer of dark sentences, and Emily Dickinson goes prose. But for the first time in this book, in one sentence... You'll pardon me, I won't tell you where. A son comes in and shoots his mother and then shoots himself and disappears from the story. We've barely met them. This woman, the narrator, the central figure, is going home. Her husband has already died. She didn't need more deaths, but now she's got them. And in a way, it verges on the pure Hollywood of melodrama, of Cirque a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and it set out this first story called Pure Hollywood, the longest in the book, out in the California desert, or Enzo Borrego maybe, and just astonishingly creepy, leaving me feel excited and bereft at the same time. What led you to event-driven writing?
I just suddenly decided I could do whatever I wanted to do on the page. I mean, other people were crashing cars and having accidents and drowning and other things. And I increasingly am doing more of that, just letting myself have some fun and go to a place that would really surprise me as opposed to staying so close. The other stories are so interior and involve very small actions and are very close to the body, which isn't to say these aren't, they are, but there's just more event.
By the way, I'm talking to Christine Scott. Her newest book is Pure Hollywood. It's published by Grove Press. I'm going to ask you to read a very short story called Where You Live When You Need Me.
Okay. Where You Live When You Need Me. Out of nowhere, Ella, a mound with no known address. A swaying mystery, swollen hands, swollen feet. Did she sleep in the playground? Ella simply appeared. No phone but a tiny notepad, a tiny pencil. Where you live? When you need me. Like the Mr. Softy sound, Ella drew children to her under the shawl of her arms. Ella was a house in the park for an afternoon that often faded into later. No trouble. Any time. Where you live, when you need me. She wasn't a bargain, but she was worth every penny. Besides, Anne Byrne, who first used Ella, said the woman spent her money on treats for the children. How else to explain the matchbook trucks I found in my son's pockets? Oh, Ella, I like it. They're happy. Me too, but you need the money. That was the summer when little parts of little bodies turned up in KFC buckets and dumpsters in the city. The summer of 1984, weeks of record heat and brown air, colonies of plague ugly rats partied under park benches, hauling off big fines, pretzels and buns, acting bold. Ella watched the children by the playground sprinklers, then picnicked in the park when the sun was down and the grass blue, the rats less visible. I saw Ella sometimes in the North Meadow, a squat teepee circled by the burn boys, chasing the little Fleming girl with squirt guns, getting sopped. For a while, we fretted over losing Ella to the Flemings. Everyone shared Ella. She had work every day if she wanted. No, Ella said, I don't leave. Then agreed to 2 weeks in July with the Flemings in Nantucket, even though by her own admission she couldn't swim. Ella brought out something in the mothers I knew, brought out something in me so that all of us recklessly employed someone about whom we knew next to nothing in a summer when the streets at night looked greasy and baby body parts were being found. No one who hired Ella that summer ever knew with any certainty her last name, let alone her address. Even the efficient Anne Byrne was unsure. Ella asked to be paid in cash. Anne Byrne probably did know Ella's last name, but she was gutting an apartment on Fifth, taking out walls, putting in new windows, and she was living in the apartment at the same time with two boys, five and two-ish, which, when I think about it now, was clearly unsafe. The barricades were useless, the boys ducked under. I see her younger son now toddling toward an open window. What a summer. A third and last reported bucket was found downtown off Bowery. As with the other bodies, the head was gone. Oddly, no report of a missing baby was ever made in any borough. Maybe the children were from out of state. I came home later than planned one night and found Ella sitting in the summer dark, which was not so dark I couldn't see her, but I wondered why not a light was on. She sat monumentally boulder-like but alive, hands as big as soup bowls stacked in her lap. Something else. At the end of the season, I stood on a slimy ledge of a waterfall with my younger son when he stepped out, and I grabbed his bib overalls just in time. What were we standing on? Why were we there? We were in the Berkshires renting a house on a small muddy lake, is all I remember. That and the sound of water and its tinkly music over and over. I believed in God back then, too. And nobody knows where he comes from.
Christine Scott, reading Where You Live, When You Need Me, from her collection, Pure Hollywood. Watch how the tension mounts. Seems to be pointing to a passage in which we'll find out that Ella is the cause of the appearance of these missing body parts. No, she's not. She's the antidote to the world of danger, as once was God, as the shocking final sentence tells us. No one knows where he came from either. And in this dangerous summer, in which all the mothers are dependent on Ella, massive Ella, to come to their rescue, because even they are taking their children to the edge, to the ledge of waterfalls. This is the miraculous salvation. Everything is lying in wait for the trap which Ella saves children from. And so it's a momentary cessation in the cavalcade of dangers that this short story collection represents. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Christine Scott about her book of stories, Pure Hollywood, published by Grove Press. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. I'm talking with Christine Scott about her latest book, Pure Hollywood, Where Ordinary Lives Take a Suspenseful and Dark Turn. Now, what do you know when you begin a story like this one? How do you get going?
In this case, I was just thinking about the wonderful women that I and my friends, when we were raising children, we entrusted our children to them. And, of course, we knew some things about them. But there were probably a lot of things we didn't know, but it was just the relation. I was interested in the relationship between the mothers at this time and the sitter. And there were, you know, sort of, there were some sitters who were real Pied Pipers, and the children just gathered around them, and you'd see a woman in the park, and all the children were engaged, and it was quite, I found that very moving. But the rest, I mean, it was just how careless sometimes a mother can be.
In the first story, Pure Hollywood, mm-hmm. there's a movie star mother,
yes,
who has left the business. She has a fabulous name.
Sabina Gad.
Throughout your work, there are parents who need an Ella,
yes,
to take care of the,
yes,
children. The children are so jeopardized. In the first story I read, it's celebrating the joys and perils of an incestuous father. And then the daughter has a drug dealer friend who's still more girlish than the daughter is and way more dangerous. Mm. And the first time we spoke, I mentioned, and I'm sure my listeners heard, this is highly poetic prose. The emphasis on hard monosyllables breaks the line up. The commas make for a sense of enjambment, a line overstaying its welcome and moving into the next line. And I said to you, have you ever written poetry? And you said, I've always wanted to, but I never had the gift for it. I didn't feel good enough to do it. Well, now one of your sons, mm-hmm. won the Yale Younger Poets Prize a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. I think his name is Will Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as mothers go, you must be very proud to have a family of writers.
I am. I'm very happy about it. It makes me very happy.
Now, given the fact that your own writing has taken you to such devastated places. I mean, those people, and they are not few, who compare your impulses in writing to Emily Dickinson, those people are not wrong. And we know, you know, that the woman who said, my life, a loaded gun, was, you know, living at a pitch of risk that is unequaled in any poetry that we know. And I wondered, writing for you seems to take place in a danger zone, like the dangers that imperil children.
Mm. Yes.
Were you an imperiled child?
Yes, yes. I think I was. I mean, there are many imperiled children, of course, and but there was a lot of dislocation, and a lot of Florida is autobiographical in terms of my mother being unwell and having to move among relatives. So, yes, I would say I saw those sorts of things.
The mixture of elegance and perversity is truly grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
It's very special. I mean, when someone drives to see the house in the first story and says it looks like the bones of vertebrae laid out flat,
yeah.
There's nothing that can be seen in your work that can't be seen at a level of disturbance and shock and surprise. It both frightens me and empowers me somehow to see better and to see more and to see differently.
Well, I am glad of that. I am glad of that.
This is your sixth book.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, do you feel that there's a change in emphasis? Can a writer escape the darkness that may inform the work from the beginning? Is there any escape, and is an escape worth it?
Well, I would very much like to write either a novel or a novella or a story where the characters are really quite sympathetic and you love them. And which isn't to say you set out writing awful people, but they somehow turn out that way.
And the world of people preying on one another,
mm-hmm.
but in the most basic ways.
Mm.
Not cannibalism, but, you know, emotional cannibalism.
Mm.
And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if there could be a story by Christina Scott? I suppose the closest you come to is the story you read, which is a story about life before the disappearance of God, or at least a principle that keeps things safe.
Mm.
But after the disappearance of Ella, it's as if, no, nothing is ever going to be safe again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, do, Christine, give us a Winnie the Pooh story. Take us to the 100-acre forest, and at most only one Eeyore. Mm. Instead, you make a story that's all Eeyores. Everyone is dissatisfied, and everyone's birthday present is a broken balloon in an empty pot of honey.
Mm. Yes, yes, I guess so. I guess so. It's true.
I admire you for it, but it takes incredible intestinal fortitude to write story. You teach writing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you teach people to go this far into the darkness, or can people only do that if they have a gift for it?
Well, it's not something I encourage. I just encourage them to go to some place where they do feel at risk in some way, so that it matters and it counts. And you have to tell those kinds of stories, I think, very carefully if you're taking up something. I mean, shame can be a very good source of something that you're ashamed of. And you can take it and make it larger, but you tell that story very carefully, I think, and it counts. It means something. I don't.
You don't recommend it necessarily.
No, I don't. I don't. I mean, I thought I have some characters in the fiction who are not entirely loathsome, but nevertheless, a lot of people still don't think that the men that I've made are very nice. I find a couple of them not so bad.
It's the atmosphere
yes.
of endangered beings.
Yes.
And I swear, I think that a Christine Scott moment where at a resort, and before long, virtually all of the adults wonder, why did that couple bring this child with them? Why didn't they go to a resort where there are younger couples mm-hmm. and it's more likely that there will be children?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this sick child the only child in this resort?
Mm-hmm.
And did the parents do this intentionally?
Mm.
Did they want, in some crazy sense, to find a place where a child doesn't belong?
Mm. I think they were very thoughtless. They were looking for a place that they, or particularly the wife, was used to. The child really was not their chief consideration. They just would like to make him well. And so they're selfish people, particularly the mother, I think, and overwhelmed by parenthood and just wonders how long it's going to last.
Not very long in this story. I've been talking with Christine Scott, author of Pure Hollywood, published by Grove Press. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's been wonderful, as always.
You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Carol Muskie Dukes is our guest.